from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitine.
Woo-wee, did that first hour fly by, Ursula. Good morning.
It sure did. Good morning, G. Happy Monday to all of you guys joining us to start off your week. We sure appreciate you. Many of you have been asking, when is that evening magazine segment going to air? It's tonight.
It's tonight, y'all.
So, again, King 5 News, Evening Magazine, 7:30. Watch us, and we can talk about it tomorrow.
I'm a little nervous for you guys to watch because I'm nervous because then you'd really get to see us talking. Because usually you hear us on the radio. You don't really see us, you know, by face and everything. But now you're going to see us tonight. And then you guys, you know, you might be getting on the physical talking about us. Like, gee, you had a double chin hanging down. Yes, I had about three of them.
Okay, if they're going to be talking about double chins, it's not going to be you. But you know what? Let's be kind.
Yes.
Right? Let's be kind to ourselves because I could go down that rabbit hole real quick right now. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to do it. We want to hear from you. 888-973-5476, 888-973 Cairo.
Let's get to it. Let's find out what's new at 10.
What's new at 10?
We want to go back to our discussion about whether we are doing everything we can to end homelessness. Are local leaders acting like we are actually in an emergency? And for this discussion, we are going to head to Pierce County, where Executive Bruce Dammeyer has vetoed a bill now that would have allowed homeless people to park their cars overnight in safe lots around the county. In a letter to the council, the Republican executive brought up concerns about how quickly the Democrat majority council passed the law on a partisan 4-3 vote. So, as you may or may not know, right now, state law allows churches to open their parking lots to the homeless who own a vehicle so they can have somewhere safe to sleep. This bill passed by the county council last month would have expanded that to schools, parks, daycares, libraries, community centers, and commercial properties. But Dammeyer says the council used temporary regulations to pass that bill, and as it stands right now, he says it will impact public trust. We have invited Matt Driscoll, the columnist for the Tacoma News Tribune, to join us. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. Thank you for joining us. So you called Executive Dammeyer's veto cruel. Explain why you use that term.
All right. Well, yeah, let's just jump right into it. Let's not beat around the bush or anything.
Well, it was in your headline.
That's true. It's true. I'm not dodging it. I think it was cruel, just frankly. And I think there are a number of reasons, and there are a number of reasons we could jump into it. But you did a pretty good job, I think, kind of describing where things stand. Now, I went out. I've written about this a few times. I went out actually on Thursday, the day before Executive Dammeyer issued his veto, and I saw a church in Spanaway that's currently doing this work, and I saw what it looks like. They have opened 5 of their parking spots to folks experiencing homelessness. Folks are referred to this lot. There's an intake line. They do background checks. This church is specifically focusing on families. Most of them are referred through the Bethel School District, the neighborhood school district there. And frankly, they're families that have recently lost housing for one reason or another. I spoke to a woman with kids who was escaping domestic violence. And this is a resource that has, frankly, in both of those cases, anecdotal, but in both of those cases, resulted in those people transitioning to housing. It has meant that their stay in homelessness, in one case, was relatively brief. In another case, it helped a family that had been on the street for a little over a year get into a house. And so I think the potential risks that Executive Dammeyer is portraying with programs like this is really overblown. And kind of getting back to your lead-in, I think the idea that we need to take more time, the idea that we have time to spend hashing this out and listening to every person in the community before we, I think what limits public trust in our response to homelessness is not doing anything. I don't think going slower is what increases public trust, particularly when you're looking at a program like this that we know how to do and we know how to do and we know helps people. So does that answer it? Is that why did I get it there?
Kind of. Yeah. I'd say Ursula did.
Well, yeah. Well, I want to. So basically, you talked about this church that had five cars with people who are experiencing homelessness. Bruce Dammeyer mentioned that his veto does not change it. Churches can continue to do that in Pierce County, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, my point, though, is if a church can do it, if we know how to do it in a church parking lot, how come we don't know how to do it in any other sort of lot?
I
mean, we know how to do this. We know how to do this. That's what gets me. We know how to do this. Now, I get in other areas, in other instances. I mean, it's complicated, right? It is complicated. Like sometimes when you get RVs involved or folks, which this program did not pertain to. It was simply people living in their car. I know it can be difficult, but the fact is we know how to do this. We know we see it working here in Pierce County. And the reason it works is because we've set up a framework, and the same framework that was included in this bill. You know, there are background checks. There are ways for people. It's not just anyone shows up and gets to park. There are limits on it. Like this church, you can identify the populations you want to work with. They're choosing to work with families and veterans and the elderly. So, again, we know how to do this. There's not a huge risk associated with this, and we just don't have time to wait.
Matt, right now, the executive, Bruce Dammeyer, would he vetoed right now, this isn't happening in any other county as well. So let me play devil's advocate for a second. If Pierce County were to allow this, do you think maybe the thought from those in the public would believe that this would encourage others to come to Pierce County, considering that King and Snohomish and other counties don't allow this?
Yeah, I mean, I think Bruce can speak for himself, but I think we hear that fear a lot when we discuss responses to homelessness, and you know, it's complicated, and I think that at times it does happen, but I think we should look at what we know, right? Like when we do the annual point in time count. Last year, I think it was roughly 70% of people identified experiencing homelessness on one night in Pierce County had a last known address in Pierce County. The year before that, I think it was close to 60%. So the majority of folks in Pierce County experiencing homelessness in Pierce County are from Pierce County or had a last address in Pierce County. Now, sometimes homeless folks move just like anyone else moves. To say it doesn't happen, I think wouldn't be accurate. But again, I go back to what are we appealing to and what is the real fear on this, right? Like, I think the knee-jerk reaction that we have, a little bit, I think it appeals to the worst in us. I mean, I think, yeah, there's a possibility, G, that if we open up more parking lots, that folks outside of Pierce County could, in theory, see that and say, this looks like a resource for me, and want to take advantage of it. But the idea that there's going to be some huge influx of folks experiencing homelessness in their cars rushing to Pierce County because we let a community center open up five parking spots in the rural part of unincorporated Pierce County just doesn't pass the smell test, I don't think. I think these are going to be people already in our communities, already sleeping in unsafe places in their car.
Right now, like you said, the 31% of the homeless people that are in Pierce County are believed to be living in cars. This count happened in 2020. It was an actual real count considering it was a pandemic. It was a slower time and easier time to calculate and figure that out. With that being said, all of these interim regulations and all the bureaucracy and all of the process and all of these things, is there anything else? Because this was only a temporary idea. Is there any other temporary ideas that someone can point to and say, hey, this is a solution? Because this homelessness crisis we're dealing with, this didn't just happen last month. We've been dealing with this for 6 years. Where can we point to with that?
Right. I mean, I think that's one of the things. I mean, and that's a really good question. It's a really complicated question, G. I mean, I think this is just what we've learned over, you know, certainly the extent of the crisis that we've been experiencing. And, I'd have to go back and Google when Tacoma declared homelessness a crisis. But I've been reporting on this for 4 or 5 years now, and it's been a crisis since long before that. But, I mean, I think this is part of part of the answer, right? Like homelessness is, there are so many different segments and so many different populations. And what we know about this population is, you know, a separate from folks living in RVs, that there are a lot of people in our community who have lost housing or have been evicted or have, are escaping domestic violence. And what they're currently doing is they're sleeping in their cars in unsafe places. We know that. We can see that with our eyes. And so this doesn't, you know, this doesn't solve, this is not the answer, but it's part of the answer. And so, I mean, when you talk about looking around and pointing for other short-term things that work, I think it's all, it's the extra shelter beds that they've opened up in the basement of Shiloh Baptist. Those serve a very specific population. It's safe parking spots. Those serve a very specific population. And together, if we can link in, you know, getting the actual housing built and getting the affordable housing building in the permanent supportive housing built, then eventually all these things can work in concert. But there's just no good excuse for delaying on the stuff that should be obvious and easy. And this is one of the things that's obvious and easy in my opinion.
So, Matt, I did get a chance to read some of the comments following your column. And there were people within your
community. You never do that. You should never do that, Ursula.
Because you say it should be easy, and we are dealing with this. And so here's my, again, I will play it devil's advocate. Initially, my reaction was like yours. Like, seriously? We all have to figure out how it is. We cannot keep doing the NIMBY, not in my backyard approach, because otherwise you're just going to continue to see people move their tents from wherever they're being moved from. Now, I mean, there's even more people living next to the freeways. That's not just my imagination. I am for sure of it, because these camps continue to grow as these sweeps are happening. And we need to have safe places for them to go. But on the other hand, I also understand where people who live near these potential safe lots want to know, well, what's in it for me? What kind of securities are you going to be offering me? When you described the parking lot with the five cars in there, I mean, that sounds perfect. They are not only allowing for people experiencing homelessness to live in their cars in that lot, but they're also doing things to make sure they know who's coming in, that there is, you know, basically it's almost like a contract. Hey, we're going to allow you to stay here, but you also have to let us know who you are and make sure that you're going to follow some kind of rules so that we don't have issues with the neighbors. And I think that's the biggest part for communities not wanting to accept it, because if we look at what happened in Ballard, Soto, someone just texted in and said they tried it at the Kent City Library, and people will point to those situations where they were disasters and say, well, I don't want that. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I absolutely do. And I mean, I think that's totally fair. I mean, I obviously went back and read some coverage of attempts to do this elsewhere. And you know, as I acknowledged in my previous answer, I mean, I know it can be difficult. But I guess the only thing I would stress is these interim regulations that were passed, they included all that. I mean, there were limits on the number it didn't just create a free for all where any community center or any business could say, let's do it. And, you know, we're going to open up. I mean, there were rules. And that gets back to my point. Because we know how to do this. Like, if you approach it this way, and you take what we have learned, and you let we're always saying people in the community need to step up. This can't just be a government response, right? Like, this allows people in your community to step up and say, okay, here's a way that I can help. And not to just continue to go back to this church in Spanaway, but that's exactly what they did. They said, okay, we're a church in Spanaway. We have a couple lots here. We could bring in a porta potty and some washing stations. We could help five families, and we're going to connect with the Bethel School District because we want to help families in our community. Yeah. Like, to put the brakes on that and to say that we need to talk about that more before we allow more people to do that. Again, I don't think that's right.
This is the voice of Matt Driscoll from the Tacoma News Tribune as he joins the Gene Ursula Show. Matt, one of the things that probably bothers me the most about this entire topic is the stigma behind those that are unhoused. And it directly goes to fire, drugs, crime, and all of those things. And the truth is, and as someone who can truly speak to this topic, because I lived in my car in 2009 and I did not commit a crime while I was living in that car, is that the stigma behind the homelessness crisis is probably the thing that really bothers me most. So my question is this: when you have community trying to help, and what kind of message does that really send to those that are in charge making these decisions when you have community trying to help?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, thank you for sharing that. And I mean, I think this decision plays in to that stigma. I think it reinforces that stigma. I think to have our elected leaders come out and say, this is dangerous, this, you know, we need to talk about this more before we let these people into our community, I think it feeds into that stigma. And you would hope, to get back to your real question, that when the government sees organizations in the community stepping up and helping people and disproving the stereotypes and contradicting the stigmas, that it would give them the courage to be bolder. But at least from the executive and his Republican colleagues on the council, that doesn't seem to be the case.
Matt Driscoll.
And I hate to make this partisan. I hate to make this partisan because it really shouldn't be partisan. I don't think it's about that. I don't think it's, you know, I don't think the executive is doing this because he's a Republican. You know, that's the way it's breaking here.
It is the way it's breaking. And in fairness, we have offered, and Bruce Dammeyer has accepted our offer to join us, and he will be doing that tomorrow on the show at 11 o'clock. Matt Driscoll with the Tacoma News Tribune, we appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. I'm gonna tune into that, but I'm going to watch you guys tonight, it sounds like, first.
Yes, so, Evening Magazine, 7:30. Yeah.
All right. Thanks for having me,
appreciate
guys.
It. Thank you. Okay, still ahead, the Rick Riz Show. So many listeners have texted in and said, that is just the best idea this year, you guys having him on every Monday. And so we are going to be joined by him and talk all things Mariners. This is the G and Ursula Show.
Show with G and Ursula.
Holy smokes! Holy smokes.
When the moon hits dry like a big pizza pie, Ursula and G, that's a morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Happy Monday to you. I love
Happy
starting
Monday
the week
too.
With the singing. You're singing. Such a happy song. Okay, so
I love that song.
Another reason to be happy. The Mariners finally ended their 4-game losing streak on Sunday thanks to this big hit from rookie Julio Rodriguez.
The pitch. Swung on and hits a deep left center field.
Hey.
There it goes. Julio checks in with his first big league home run. And the Mariners have a 5-0 lead.
Okay, so the Marlins that's awesome. They intentionally walked Abraham Toro to get to Rodriguez. And teams, of course, do that to get to a hitter they don't think very highly of. But at some point, is Julio going to be the kind of hitter that opposing pitchers would rather walk than face?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's going to get to that point. I mean, he's getting things turned around right now, Ursula. And G, off to a slow start, as most rookies do. But over the last 7 games, I just looked it up, he's hitting .320 with an on-base percentage of .393 with slugging percentage of .480. And besides that huge home run, his first home run in the big leagues, Dave Sims had a tremendous call. I started to go crazy in the background, so I had to turn off my mic. He also had an infield base hit. He legged out a ground ball to third, and he legged it out for an infield base hit. And then, which shows you he's going to be a good hitter, Ursula and G, is that in the 8th inning, he's a right-handed hitter, as you know. He had a base hit to the opposite field and right. So this kid is figuring things out. He's going to be one of the best players, you know, this organization has seen in a long time. But he's really starting to get it. And the arc and the distance of that home run, I thought it was going to be bring rain inside the enclosed Lone Depot Park in Miami yesterday. It was a long way, about 450-plus from home plate. It was fun to see. And I was so happy for the kid. I saw him after the game and at the hotel. He's got the baseball. I'm sure he's going to give it to his dad or mom, and he's just a super kid.
Hey, Rick, right now, there's a lot of people that's listening. Is like, hey, you know what? I don't really watch baseball. I don't really know all the stuff that's going on. Kind of in a fun way, explain what the month of April was like for the Mariners.
I tell you what, you know, they had a winning month. And G and Ursula, if you could have yourself a winning month every month, which the Mariners basically did last year, when you add it up and you get to September, you're going to be in contention. You got to play 2, 3, 4 games over 500 every month, and they did that. They were 11-10. They lost some games that maybe they should have won, but they were over 500. They had fun doing it. It's a great group of guys. Scott Servais, again, has done a super job with his club, along with pitching coach Pete Woodworth and all the rest. But they're figuring out how to meld together as a team. Their offense is going to be much better than it was last year. The pitching, incredible. Logan Gilbert has been a star here in the first month of the year. 5 starts, and he's 4-0 with a 0.64 ERA. You got the best pitcher in the American League last year, and now in your rotation, Robbie Ray. So they're just getting together as a team, G, and they're having fun, and they played over 500, and they look to do it again in May.
What are some things that you look for? Because I can hear you. You're excited about players, and you've been around this game for a long time. What are some things that you look for that makes you think, hey, this player is going to be good? Give us some ideas on that.
Well, number one, he's already there, Logan Gilbert. I mean, Logan in 5 starts is 4-0 with a 0.64 ERA. He allowed 1 earned run yesterday. The previous earned run, G, was to the second batter that he faced on April the 2nd in Minnesota. That was a home run by Luis Arraez. He's been outstanding. 4-0 record in 5 starts. Then you see Julio Rodriguez coming around right now. Jesse Winker was an all-star last year in Cincinnati. He hit .305. He had a slow start. But yesterday, he did a really nice job. He had 3 hits, a double. He drove in 2 big insurance runs in the top of the 9th inning. You're going to see Eugenio Suarez get going, driving in runs. He was an all-star a few years ago. He's hit more home runs than anybody in baseball in the last 4 years. Adam Frazier, you know, had 2 hits yesterday, went in the ballgame, hitting just .238, but he hit .324 last year in Pittsburgh. And then the guy that's been the most surprising of anybody, and really the biggest offensive driver in that offense, has been J.P. Crawford. J.P. now with a 10-game hitting streak, batting .405, 2-for-3 yesterday against Sandy Alcantara, one of the best starters in the National League, hit a home run to right field. He also had a double and scored a couple of runs. He's number one in the American League, hitting .372, second in on-base percentage, only to Mike Trout. So there's a lot of good things to look at in this lineup. And Tom Murphy went to the ballgame batting .385 yesterday. Jerry Kelnick is going to figure things out as well. He's got 2 home runs and is playing great right field. Rodriguez and Kelnick doing great in center field and right field respectively. So, and the bullpen has been very, very good. Paul Sewald, all he's done is, you know, retired everybody he's faced. And so there's a lot of good things to look forward to in May and for the rest of the year.
Okay, so I heard you just a little bit earlier say that you turn off the mic and then you go crazy. Why not just let it all air out on the mic?
Well, because he's doing the David is doing the play-by-play.
Oh.
So I don't want to ruin his call. And he had a great call yesterday, and I had my mic on. I was getting ready to say something. And then Julio hit that ball. He went, ah, you know, and I go, oops. And so I learned that for 25 years with Dave Niehaus, you know, to get out of his way because he was the best ever. And that's what you learn when a guy's doing a call, you know, stay out of his way so he has a chance to make a great call. And Dave Sims was right on it yesterday.
Awesome. Okay, so one of our reporters recently talked to the chef at T-Mobile Park and talked about the menu. And I wanted to play this again for you because I want to talk food. Because you're a foodie, I'm getting.
I love food. We got some pork tacos. We got some chicken tacos. I mean, everything has a little freshness. We got some pico de gallo with some pineapple to give some freshness to the food. We have the barbecue stand, holy moly barbecue. Short rib, long bone with some mac and cheese, cornbread, coleslaw. We got some brisket with that as well.
Okay, have you tried it all?
No, I haven't, but I wish I could, Ursula. I'm going to, you know, over the course of the year, I'll try to get out there and taste everything. I wish I had that guy's accent, you know. I want to, a pork taco and a burrito. He sounds great.
Yep.
And all the food sounds great. So fans have a wonderful selection when they come out to T-Mobile Park, the best ballpark in baseball, to watch an exciting team play and also to be entertained. The marketing department, I think, is the best at baseball. They make it fun, the pregame shows and everything like that and the promotions. And then there's the food, and it's absolutely phenomenal.
Rick Riz, we appreciate you for jumping on with us. We will talk to you again next Monday. Let's keep these Mariners rolling. Thank you so much. Rick Riz with the Mariners. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome, Gene Ursula. That's Amore. I love the theme music at the beginning.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, Rick, when they called you, how did you answer the phone?
I answer the phone. When the moon hits, I like a big pizza pie. That's Amore. That's Amore. When the stars seem to sign like you've had too much wine, that's Amore. Okay, I won't bug anymore.
No, that's great voice. Thank you.
Love you, Rick. Take care, brother.
Love you guys. Thanks, Ursula.
Hey, coming up next, it's time for, you know what we do. We get a little nosy and judge other people's lives. They call it Scenarios. G and Ursula. Oh, coming up next, agree to disagree happens at 11 o'clock. And one of those questions is this. Do you care about where you drop your clothes off or things that you don't want anymore? We'll talk about that like next. But right now, let's get to the scenario.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
Ursula, help. I totally screwed up and need to figure how to fix this. I was asked to apply for a job, not just any job, but my dream job. I mean, I really want this job. It's one of those life-changing opportunities that doesn't come around very often. Here's the problem. I was instructed to apply on the company website to get the process started. So I did. I filled out all the information, attached my resume, and a cover letter like people tell you to do. Well, I thought it was a cover letter. I made a mistake. It was actually the wrong file, and it was a copy that I uploaded an electric bill that happens to be past due on there. Now, I don't know what to do next. My question is this. How do I address it? Do I say nothing and hope they ignore it? Or do I say something and really draw attention to the matter? I really need help with this. 888-973-CHIRO is the State Roofing text line. Ursula, you're up to bat first.
I absolutely have to acknowledge it. Because if you don't, then that will just speak to your lack of attention to detail that you might not even know that it happened. Of course, people make mistakes all the time. Just own up to it. Say, oh, good grief. How embarrassing. I uploaded this. They're not going to be paying. If you know that it's late, they're not going to be looking that closely at your bill. They're just going to see, oh, someone, put the wrong thing in here. This person. If it's your dream job and you've been told that you basically have it, you just have to go through the steps of doing it, they want reasons to hire you, not reasons to not hire you. So own up to your mistake, get it over with, send it as quickly as possible, rectify it as quickly as possible, and you're all good.
Chef, what you got, bro?
First of all, I think you're fine because you're assuming that people actually read the resumes and cover letters that are submitted through company websites, which I submit 99% of them are not. However, you've been asked to apply for the job, so there is a chance they will actually look at yours, in which case this is an opportunity for you to show how you handle a mistake with a company that you're applying for a job with. You absolutely find out the HR director's email address and contact information. You send them the correct copy of your resume along with your cover letter, and you say, I mistakenly submitted a past due bill instead of my cover letter, and I want to let you know that this is my cover letter, and it's important for me to correct mistakes both in my personal life and in my work life. I think it's important to acknowledge them and do so immediately. So thank you for considering my resume, and you just gave yourself a leg up on the competition.
You absolutely great stuff, you guys. You absolutely just gave yourself a leg up on the competition. First of all, I think this is genius to do it on purpose. Here's why. Here's why. Hear me out for a second. How many cover letters are going to really get looked at? But a cover letter that has a past due electric bill on that, that's going to get passed around. Folks are going to want to talk about who is this. Ha, ha, ha. So this is your chance to take the real cover letter, and it's an excuse to go up to the job and say, hey, yeah, I was the one that made the mistake that sent my past due electric bill. I want to give you my real cover letter. Now you're at the top of the charts. Now everybody's going to be focused on you. And you know what? It also shows real life. That's why I need this job. I need this job so I don't have any more of these past due electric bills.
Yeah. And the worst thing you can do is be defensive about it or just try to make up some crummy excuse that's going to sound like you're lying because you are lying. Just own up to the mistake. But the one thing I want to correct or just agree with, I guess, is this idea that companies don't look at your cover letters and resumes. Yeah, they do, especially now that people are desperate for help. They're looking, and they're looking at ones that they may have passed up in the past. They're looking at them again, like, is there a reason I can find to have a different feeling about this person? Because we need people to help. So always assume that people are going to be looking at it, and that's why you don't want to have typos in there. You don't want to address the wrong person. You don't want to have a letter that is obviously something that is not specific for the job that you're applying, or maybe you leave the name of another company that you're applying to. There are all these reasons, but you've got to go through it with a fine-tooth comb and then go through it again before you hit that apply button.
Ursula, I just want to let you know that you give great advice when it comes to what employers are looking for.
Yeah.
And I just want to tell you that I have no idea when it comes to this whole resume process. So I'm conceding and saying, listen to Ursula.
Yes. Because I've looked at many, 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 many resumes, and I've made very many, a lot of judgments based on resumes and cover letters. And usually to the benefit of the person who's applying. Like, I may have changed, you know, looking at their cover letter.
What if you send a picture of yourself on your cover letter?
Only if it's appropriate. If you're doing that, it's not appropriate.
No. Hear me out. If you send a professional headshot on your cover letter, why is that a bad idea?
It just depends. Again, you have to be able to read what it is the company's looking for. It makes sense if you're applying for a TV job. It makes sense if you're applying, but you're just sending a letter, it will stand out and maybe not in a good way.
Honesty really goes a long way in this situation. You just fess up and tell them what happened. Say, hey, here's my resume. I mistook my bill for what I intended to give you. And I think they should really find some room for this person. Hey, let this guy in. He's a good guy. You know, honesty, I think, is a huge virtue, and it's hard to find, few and far between, with those kind of people.
Admitting when you're wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that is something that I admire in people, when they can admit they're wrong.
Apologize if you are offended. Is that how you apologize?
No.
Okay.
Do not apologize that way.
Hey, coming up next, it is time for Agree to Disagree. It's one of your favorite segments of the day. We do that next. It's G and Ursula.